Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast. By the faithful and for the faithful, I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Just finished posting the game grades and doing the podcast to wrap up a workman-like effort from us at the Cult of Hockey, and I guess also from the Oilers, who managed a 4-2 win against the 31st place team in the NHL.
Yeah, and it was full value on the win. They outchanced them, grade A chances, 15-8, and got the better of the play most of the game.
Strange.
So, Bruce, this is the Two Good Things, Two Bad Things, Two Numbers podcast with the Oilers. Mm-hmm. What's your good thing?
Well, I'm going to go with old faithful Connor McDavid. Bouncing back with a very good game after a very inconspicuous game, or should I say conspicuously uneventful game in Toronto last night, where he didn't get a lot done. And tonight he came out sort of loaded for bear right off the bat, and he was jumping on pucks and creating chances and just being his usual or at his best buzzsaw in the offensive zone, creating chances left and right. Overall, he was involved in 8 grade A scoring chances for the Oilers and none against.
Wow.
Both of which are terrific numbers. He was on for 2 goals for, 1 goal against, but that one was not his fault when he was on the short end of a very poor line change, which we'll talk about a bit later on. Led the team with 6 shots, 9 shot attempts, and a number of very nice passes as well, including a terrific one battle that led to the empty net goal, even though he didn't get a point on the play. His determination to win the puck inside Oilers' blue line was the key that set the 3 guys free that eventually put the puck in the net.
I'm really looking forward to the day Bruce Connor McDavid plays on a good Oilers team again. I mean, he did play on a good Oilers team in 2016-17.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very good team. And I think if the defense stay healthy next year, we might see a pretty good team as well. But it's almost like there's a little bit holding back from full McDavid enjoyment right now. It's always like Connor McDavid, but he's with this team that's not doing well. Connor McDavid, but he doesn't have good line mates. I was thinking about it tonight watching him play. There's just so much tension and anxiety around the team that you just can't really ever relax and enjoy. Enjoy this great hockey player, and it's important to recognize him when he is great and to enjoy these moments with this player on this team, because he really is a fantastic hockey player.
Well, tonight's goal was just his second 5-on-5 goal in the last 15 games that he's played. So for goal scoring, he really has been a little bit in the doldrums. He's been setting up about a goal a game. So certainly he's been producing on the offensive side, but at full power, McDavid is both a goal-scoring and assist-scoring machine. And it's nice to see the goal-scoring aspect come back out tonight. That was a beautiful finish.
So, Bruce, my good thing is throw them all in the same basket. It's the Foot Soldiers. I thought this was a game where the Foot Soldiers and the Oilers played really well. So these are players like Josh Curry, Colby Cave, who were Curry was in on 2 goals, McDavid's and Cave's, where he put the puck to the net both times. On the Oilers' second goal, it's Sam Gagner, Ty Ratty, Matt Benning put the puck at the net, and Sekera, who had a really nice sequence, kind of controlling the puck at the blue line and showed off that agility and mobility that I feared was going to be forever gone from his game, but seems like it might be there, maybe, just maybe.
Showed well on that play with those spinoramas out at the blue line, and
he sure didn't do that last year, Bruce. And he did it there, and that was fantastic.
And it led to a goal.
Curry sure is. He had me thinking about all these players who have come up and shown spurts of good play, and never panned out. Like Cogliano came to mind, and Nielsen, and. No, he's not a young prospect at all. I think he's 26.
Oliver.
Yeah, there's just endless, right? But he's a smart player, and he hustles, and he makes good plays with the puck. So that'd be something. It's just so – God, the Oilers have been so mediocre on the wing, just people not making plays. And it's just nice to see someone who can make a play. And Cave as well. So, Gagne, who got the goal, and Ratty, who passed it to Gagne. Like, I kind of like all those players. I mean, I don't mind Ty Ratty. I wish he had done a bit more. But all those guys at least can make a play. And that's not always the case with all the Oilers wingers. So.
Yeah, well, Josh Curry can also make a play without the puck, which is I thought he might be come up here and – be a little bit of an offensive dandy, but have his issues on the defensive side of the puck, but that hasn't really been noticeable. I've liked his positioning. He's been burned a time or two, but they all get burned a time or two. But it's not like an all-the-time thing. And tonight he got his first two NHL assists. First one was just sort of firing a centering pass in the general direction of McDavid, letting the Phenom do the rest. But the second one was very, very nice. He made a real slick touch pass just outside the blue line to chip it back into the zone where Lucic could get on the guy, force the turnover. And then when Curry got the puck back, right away, zing, he fed it right to Colby Cave in front, alone in front, and he was able to make the deke and deposit. So, it was two high-quality passes about 3 seconds apart from Curry. And that's the sort of thing that you used to see that kind of stuff from Jordan Eberle, right? But it's been a while since we've had a skill winger. So whether that's just sort of one play here and there, but if you look at what the guy's been doing in the minors, the skill is for real. And it doesn't look like a fluke. Like, it's surprising to see anybody doing anything out of the flanks for Edmonton, but he's doing it on merit to my eye.
Yeah, I've watched him for a few years now on the farm team. And he's always impressed down there. You always think watching him. I guess I'm guilty of having hit the label, of a player, a really unheralded player, and not maybe giving him his due. And watching him and projecting him as a pro player, because he's always been one of the best players on the Bakersfield team. He zips around just like this. He zips around the ice and makes good plays and hustles his butt off.
Up until this year, he was on an AHL contract, which is also going to jaundice your opinion a little bit. Like, you just think, he's a good player at that level, but obviously the organization doesn't see him. But, when they signed him last summer, I thought, it's time. He's earned this. And it's not impossible that we might see him up here. And here he is.
So that the Gagne goal burst came on a great sequence. And we talked about Sekera on that sequence, but it was 45 seconds of offensive zone time, which, if you can get a third or a fourth line to do that once a period, even twice a period, that's what the good teams have. They have that. That's what they get out of those lines, is once or twice a period, the third or the fourth lines gets that kind of offensive zone time. And it's something we have hardly ever seen on the Oilers this year, because those players aren't skilled enough and quick enough to make those kind of plays. But good for them. Good for doing it. What's your bad thing, Bruce?
I'm going to do the very rare thing for me, and I'm going to single out Ryan Nugent-Hopkins for a bad thing. And we all know the Nugent never does any wrong, but he sure did tonight, and I've got to say something. This is with the Oilers leading 3-1 midway in the third period and fairly comfortably in control of the game. And his line with Toby Reeder and Alex Chiasson had the puck in the offensive zone. They started to lose control of it, and Nuge kind of coughed it up once, and he got it back, and he kind of turned and fired it wildly across the zone to an Ottawa Senator. So he kind of trapped his line mates in front of him. But the two defensemen were back, and Nuge was the high forward, and it looked like it was just going to be a 3-on-3. And then for whatever reason, he just coasted off to the bench for a line change while the 3-on-2 went unabated up the ice. And Ottawa had all day three guys against two. And eventually
4-on-2.
Was it 4-on-2? Yeah. Well, eventually I mean, it was such a wide open chance that Mark Borowiecki was able to score his first goal of the season, because the two defensemen, I mean, Russell did what Russell does, made a sliding defensive stop, but you need to have a little bit of help, and he had none, and the extra Ottawa guy just came in and made the deposit. And all three forwards went off on a change during an Ottawa jailbreak. And I said to my wife right then and there, I said, if I was a coach, those guys would be missing the next shift no matter what. But they were right out there for the next shift. And the next shift, they were terrible. They were out for a minute and 40 seconds, had an icing in the middle, lost a face-off, and Ottawa pounded the puck around the zone, and only the fortuitous call of the referee of a high-sticked puck that was very dubious, very close to crossbar level, or the game would have been tied up on consecutive bad shifts by the same line. But they got the let off, and fortunately, the score just held at 3-2, basically all the way in.
That high sticking rule, the intent of it, right, is to encourage players to not have their to be waving their sticks in the air and
Right.
dangerously. That's the idea, right?
Yes.
On that play, the guy was, I mean, I agree that it was a borderline call.
It's right at the crossbar level.
That said, if they wanted to punish someone, his stick was up way up high initially, right? And he brought it
Yeah.
down. Now, by the time it hit the puck, he had brought it down. But
Right.
initially, it was in kind of a dangerous spot. So if the intent of that rule is to prevent that kind of, I mean, he was doing it. It wasn't like his stick was always kind of at waist level and he
Right.
raised it up. He had it way up high.
Yeah, he
That's a day.
came down like a
Yeah.
lacrosse swing on it. Yeah.
So, I don't feel, although I felt he might have got a raw deal, I also felt, well, but the intent of the rule is to prevent exactly what you did. So perhaps there's a little justice there. All
Well,
right. But
always getting
I
a
agree on
call
that
is.
bad line change. What a terrible line change. I mean, it was like, we've seen a decade of terrible line changes on the Oilers, and that was maybe the worst. It's certainly on the list. It's in the top
It's
five.
the worst of this season, I think. I can't think of another one. Certainly not where multiple players were involved, but particularly Nugent Hopkins. This is what's so shocking about it, because his attention to detail is usually pretty strong.
Yeah, we
But
keep track of bad line changes. Let me see how many there's been on the Oilers. So my bad thing, Bruce, were Klefbom and Larson again, who I just thought had just another bad game. And let me see here. I'm still searching our big document to see how many bad line changes there's been. Anyway, Klefbom and Larson haven't been playing well. They got beat on a couple of grade A chances. Klefbom was one of the culprits on the first goal against.
they both
And
were.
yeah, they both were.
Larson got sucked behind the net, and then he picked off Draisaitl, who was trying to chase
Yeah, they
Tierney,
both were.
who wound up putting the puck in the net.
That's right. They just like it's like, come on. You have Oscar Klefbom, Adam Larson, and Leon Draisaitl back there protecting your goal. They've got to do better. Those are three players in the Oilers' top five players. And you can't have those guys making defensive mistakes like that. And
I
they're all
agree.
three really re solid players. So just, do better. Be better than that.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to say. I wasn't impressed with their game. I haven't been for a couple of games. They're out of sync. Maybe it's because Klefbom's hurt his hand and he's really out of sync. But not good.
Well, they were under the gun right from the opening whistle. The puck went straight into the Oilers' zone, and they were chasing right in
Yeah.
the first shift. And on the night, looking at shot attempts, Larson was on the ice for 7 by the Oilers and 28 by the Senators. And Klefbom basically the same at +7, -26. And the puck was in their end the whole time, is what that tells you pretty much.
So, Bruce, the Oilers have had 13, that was the 14th, they've had 13 bad line changes this year, which have contributed to grade A scoring chances against. 13. So, is that one in
Well,
five games?
yeah.
93 has a few. Nugent Hopkins has had.
I've had more than one.
Oh, yeah. This is, okay. Yeah. He's had more than one. So anyway, maybe I'll have to do a post on bad line changes and point out the culprits.
Mm-hmm.
What's your number? I just had a number there, but I got a different one. Yeah, I'll give my number first, Bruce. Mine's 200. Sure. So this is one of the Kevin Quinn nuggets. He's always got a few during the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was Chris Russell's 200th game.
Oh, yes.
The Edmonton Oilers. And not a bad game. It's kind of a typical Russell game in a lot of ways. And I just want to say I like this player. He's put up with a lot of abuse in Edmonton, I think unfairly. I don't quite get it. I know that what's behind it, but if you just watch this player play, and if you'd watched him in any decade before advanced statistics, people would have said, yeah, just a nice, solid, gritty defensive defenseman who does his job.
Advanced statistics do not like defensive defensemen.
And that's what Russell is. He's a gritty defensive defenseman who does his job. And he's like a 4-5 D man. I think with the right partner, he can be a decent fourth D man on your team, or with a real puck mover. I really liked them always with Andre Sekera.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that those two really worked well together, and maybe we'll see that. Now,
ideally, Russell is not the primary puck mover in his pairing.
He can't be. Yeah. And we talked last night about Nurse and him struggling to move the puck. But I'm here to praise Chris Russell. I think he's a decent, a solid NHL hockey player. He's played more than 700 NHL games now. Good for him. And I think he's got at least another 100 in him pretty good rate.
He's beaten some pretty long odds to get to this point.
Yeah, he's not big. He's one of the smallest guys on the ice. And
70 pounds, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like one of the smallest defensemen in the league.
Yeah. So I don't know what his future is with the Oilers. I mean, he does have a no-movement clause, although I think they could trade him this summer to a number of teams. And it's a possibility that will happen. I mean, it's clear that the Oilers need more puck-moving, better puck-moving defensemen than they have. Mm-hmm. The top four with Larson, Nurse, and Russell is definitely one really super puck mover shy of a load. Like, you just can't – those three guys, they're too similar. You could have maybe two of them in your top four, but you sure can't have three.
Well, and Nurse will transport the puck, but in terms of distributing the puck, he's not real strong. He's, you know
– Yeah.
You'd rather have – and, I mean, at some point they're going to have to make room for the Caleb Jones or Ethan – Evan Bouchard – or Ethan Bear or Joel Persons that are coming up through the system, or Dmitry Samarukov, who's really exploded in the second half of his final junior campaign and is blossoming into an excellent prospect.
Well, here's the thing. They got Bouchard and Samarukov and Persson coming to the North America next year, to the Oilers system.
Yes.
They're going to have to find room for them in Bakersfield. I mean, it's getting crowded down there as well. So
already, yeah.
There's going to have to be some movement. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what happens. But for now, and for the last 3 years, I've been a Chris Russell fan. I think he's done a decent to good job on the Oilers' defense. So good for him. What is your number?
Well, my number, I'm just going to go with his partner, Darnell Nurse, who tonight picked up his 32nd point of the season in his 64th game. He's exactly on pace again, half a point a game, or 1 point every two games if you prefer, and that's on pace for a 41-point season for a guy who has taken a fair, you know, I don't think many people saw a lot of offensive upside for this guy. And a 40-point season, I mean, he started, he didn't get on the power play until after Klefbom got hurt, you know, sort of 30 games into the season. So he's been picking up some points on the power play. And some points, I don't know how he does it, it's almost by osmosis. He gets a lot of kind of cheap points, second points and stuff. And he seems to get more of those than anybody else on the team. So I'm not sure how real the 32 points is, and how some of it might just be he's on a little bit of a good streak in terms of putting up better numbers than maybe the play warrants.
Definitely, but definitely that's the case, Bruce.
But he's going to be expensive. Is, you know, that's the next number, is that he's, of course, signed a 2-year bridge deal. And as the points go up, so does the price of that next contract. So it's kind of a double-edged sword when he scores. Tonight he got an assist on the empty netter, for example.
Yes, well, yeah, he's got one more year before they have to negotiate that contract. So he might, his point total might drastically drop next year.
But 7 goals, 25 assists, 32 points, all career highs. And he's pounding up the big minutes, you know, like, you know, when you look at 25-minute games, that's a common thing for Darnell anymore.
Yeah, I'd like to see him do it again. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's going to necessarily get paid for that, because I don't think that's the role he's going to have next year. Although, you know, I do want to see him with a player like maybe Bouchard down the road. I don't know if Bouchard's going to be ready next year. Probably not. Probably need a year in the AHL or sometime down there at least. But it'll be interesting to see when Nurse gets paired with a really good offensive hockey player. We're going to really see his value come out, because I think his physical presence, we'll start to really focus on that and his skating and what he does do, rather than the inability of that pairing to move the puck well.
What he does do, I mean, you look for passes from the back end, but what he does do is drive up and into the play. You often see him as the third or certainly fourth man on the rush. And the play will go through his stick, and if somebody scores along the way, he might get a point. And so he doesn't necessarily do it as being the on-ice general from the back end, like you kind of expect for scoring offensive blue liner. But he certainly gets involved. He's very proactive. And a lot of good things happen when he gets involved. Not all good things. You know, he makes mistakes, to be sure. But also a lot of nice things occur because Darnell gets involved in the play, and the Oilers have that extra body in the in the area.
So you say Nurse has 32 points?
I believe that's correct.
Drew Doughty has 33. Huh. There you go.
There you go.
Meaningless defense. Anyway, it's not meaningless. Points aren't meaningless for anybody, but second assists can be, and especially for defensemen.
They're a little bit random. Meaningless, but they're a little bit random. I mean, and D-man, sometimes they get third assists and sometimes they get second assists, and only one of them shows up in the summary. And really, they're probably not too different from one another, right?
Well, look at Secker, that beautiful play at the blue line that he made. He didn't get an assist. That was a third assist. Yeah. So there you go. That's how it is with D-man. Bruce, let's leave it there. It's been a long day. So thanks for talking tonight.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone. Next game is Saturday morning against Columbus. So it's not just 3 and 4 days for the Oilers on the road. It's 3 on 4 days, or 3 and 3.5 days, just to up the challenge a little bit. But we'll be back at it on Saturday.
Alrighty. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.